Hi, welcome to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star's editorial department, filling in for Buckmaster, as if anyone really can fill in for Bill Buckmaster. If all you regular listeners know that I'm true, I'm right. I am joined here today at KVOI 1030 by Joe Ferguson, news reporter from the Arizona Daily Star. He covers politics, and our guest for the first part of the show is Fred Duvall, who all of you, I'm sure, know that who is the Democratic candidate for governor, ran unopposed in the primary. So for a lot of voters, they are just getting to know you.
Right. Yeah. And grew up in Tucson, of course, a Sam Hughes, Mansfield, Tucson High, U of A kid, and always good to be home. And, Tucson's been good to me, and I'm hopeful it'll be good to me in November. I gather the Republicans are seeding a lot of Pima County and not stopping in Tucson on their roadshow. And I'm here as fast as I can after the Tuesday night to claim it as my hometown.
So, Joe Ferguson, why don't you go ahead with your question?
Well, let's talk a little bit about what people are seeing on TV. So you got your hat out. You've got an endorsement from a pretty prominent Republican.
Yes, I have a long history of working across the aisle, Republicans and Democrats. I did it Bruce Babbitt's day, for those who have long memories, Burt Barr and Leo Corbett, who will be endorsing me, who was the Senate president at the time. I'm going to have hundreds of Republicans coming out who've watched me work in a bipartisan collaborative space around strategic goals for the state. In the 80s, we did the Groundwater Act together, bipartisan. We built Access. It was a stop and start. It was a hard fought, but ultimately in a bipartisan basis, the Phoenix Freeway System. And that's the tradition I come out of. It's the Mo Udall, Barry Goldwater tradition. It was true in my work on welfare reform in the Clinton White House, which was very much a bipartisan deal working with governors of both parties. And then most recently, during my term on the Board of Regents, designing a new governance model and a new delivery model where students could go on a website, which I led, called ArizonaTransfer.com, enabling them to take courses from multiple institutions at a lower cost. And Republicans and Democrats worked on that together. And because of that, Grant out publicly supporting me, and many other Republicans will follow.
One of the things that I think I've heard from voters, Democrats included, and some independents and Republicans, is that, yes, they know your name. They've seen your materials, but they don't quite understand what it is that your background is, what it is mm-hmm. you do. I mean, mm-hmm. Doug Ducey, the Republican candidate, he was selling ice cream.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very definable.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been state treasurer for the past 4 years. Mm-hmm. But before that, he was the ice cream guy. Can mm-hmm. you explain in kind of layman's terms mm-hmm. what it is that your career path has been?
Absolutely. Glad to. I worked for many years with Governor Babbitt, from the very beginning of his gubernatorial term up until the end. Practiced law for a few years. Went off to the Clinton White House for 7 years, first at the State Department and then ultimately managing the government affairs job, which deals with governors. I then started my own practice, a small business, which is a consulting firm that's done PR, done some lobbying, done sort of a variety of issue management initiatives. But most prominently, the last 6 years, I've been working with T. Boone Pickens, who's a well-known Texas oil guy, a Republican, who called me and said, look, I've got this idea. I want to spend my own money to brand myself nationally in a way that creates bipartisan collaboration around American energy independence and American fuels, and need you to join me as someone who can work with both sides and with Democrats as well to help us build this coalition. And that's what I've been doing up until I jumped into the governor's race.
Joe Ferguson.
Well, you've got a great ad up with one Republican backing you, but there's a group of Republicans that came out, spent six figures on ads against you that ran starting on Wednesday. So
yes.
Can we talk a little bit about that attack?
Yeah, you bet. So, and it's an important contrast. My first instinct in this general election is to go positive in a collaborative way with one Republican representing many others who will follow. There will be literally a number of former Republican legislators, a couple hundred Republican civic leaders, et cetera, who understand that this is about the ability to build bridges to both sides. Their first reaction is a dark money third party ad designed by, paid for folks who are out of state, who probably most of them don't know Doug, don't know me, don't know much about Arizona. It's just a win-loss record, and their first instinct was to go negative. And I understand it. It's the unfortunate dark money forces in play in today's politics. I'm going to try and do it differently and be positive, be aspirational, try and draw people together.
One of the things that has we've been talking kind of about the campaign, the politics of it. We've gotten to know the Republican candidates because of the primary. And one of the things that Doug Ducey, the Republican nominee, has been very focused on has been the idea of reducing, phasing out the income tax. What is your approach to get into some specifics about policy differences? Good. Can you talk about your approach to state taxes, to yes. the income tax, to corporate taxes?
Yes, absolutely. I want Arizona to be as competitive as possible. We need to be a pro-growth, pro-business state, and that has a lot of moving parts. It means we need to be more inclusive. We've paid a big price for 1070 and 1062. We need to send a message that we're an inclusive place that invites talent, be it LGBT, straight, what have you, that if you are young and smart and innovative, come to Arizona. We need to have pro-growth strategies in the tax system, the regulatory system, and better workforce. And we are now not competitive in workforce. We are not producing the kind of talent we need to compete. And so my number one goal is to stop cutting public education. We've cut deeper on a per student basis than any state in the United States. One third of our teachers leave every year. We now officially have the largest class sizes in the United States. We are seeing the signs of sustained cuts. So my first objective is to stop the cuts. There are some areas of the tax code I think we can be more competitive, mostly on the innovation end, R&D tax credits, things of that kind, and in the small business, so where we get create a more startup economy. Much as I would love to kind of pander and say, I'm going to abolish taxes, that's not where I am, because the budget is between $9.5 and $10 million. The idea that you could take 40% of it out, which is more than all the money we put in public education, it's just not realistic. It's not honest. You've got to make choices, and it's a false expectation.
Joe.
Well, let's go just a little bit further on that. So if it's pandering, then how do we get to a pro-business community? I mean, we've got a Republican-controlled legislature. We've got a Republican in the governor's office. How do we become more pro-business? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your campaign, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we've been very aggressive on taxes, and it's been helpful to our pro-business environment. We've reduced taxes in Arizona 23 of the last 24 years. We've reduced taxes faster over those two decades than any state in the United States. So we've been very competitive on the tax side. But public education has paid the price for much of that, and we've so shrunk our investment in public education and the measurements I've indicated. So number one is what I would call the brand proposition, which is Arizona needs to be a place that is known as pro-business, pro-education. We're investing in results, better results from our kids, and third, the right balance of regulatory tax policy to accomplish that. And we can get this economy growing again, but we're stalled right now. Our unemployment situation is severe. We're above the national average. We've reduced taxes 23 of the 24 years as a strategy for economic growth, and our unemployment rate is above the national average. It's more complicated than that. It is also about talent and workforce and making sure that our kids have the skills to compete.
Something that we've talked a bit about in discussing education that you brought up is that it's linked to business. I mean, it's linked to businesses wanting to come here, wanting to build a workforce, wanting to grow their companies. Is that something that is an easy message for people to understand, or is it not linear enough, like one-to-one for voters to make that connection in like, oh, well, we need to cut the budget, so let's cut the budget, and not understand that down the line that does have an effect? What are you hearing from people? Is that a connection folks make?
It's both. There's no question that, folks want to make sure the tax rates are not overly burdensome. They are, mindful that taxes, nobody likes to pay taxes. I get that. I'm in the same boat as everybody else. But they also see it in their public schools. parents that have kids are seeing what's happened with these cuts, and they recognize that. If you're an employer and you're recruiting talent, you know that it's a struggle to get all the good talent that you need. Look at Raytheon. Raytheon literally has over 100 positions available that they can't fill from local talent. Boy, that's a missed opportunity for Arizona. And I hear that story all the time. Last night, I was at a high-tech startup event in Scottsdale, and of the 22, 23 people that were there, three of them were packing their bags. They're planning to take their venture and their business, Texas, Silicon Valley, Massachusetts, other places where they think that they can find the talent they need to grow. We can't afford that kind of talent loss if we want to compete in the 21st century.
Great. Well, we are coming up at 12:15. I think it's time for us to take a short break. Stay tuned. We will be back with more with Fred Duvall, Democratic candidate for governor, and Joe Ferguson, Arizona Daily Star's political reporter. Stay with us.
I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman on behalf of Five Star Termite and Pest Control. You know, I've got five kids and four of them are daughters.
Daddy, Daddy, there's a spider in my room.
Oh boy, did I get smart. I took care of the spider, but the smartest thing I ever did was call Five Star Termite and Pest Control. Guess what? No more bugs in a Lehman household. They do a great job. They're economical and environmentally friendly.
We're Five Star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
This is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Whether you shower, clean, or drink it, you will come in contact with water every day. So the question is, how often do you think about what's in your water, and how is your water affecting you and your loved ones? The fact is, there are likely contaminants in your water that will have an effect on the taste and smell of the water, not to mention why water is chlorinated. The good news is that Culligan has a solution. The Culligan AC30 reverse osmosis drinking water system is the powerful solution for filtering out impurities that affect your water. This state-of-the-art solution reduces chlorine and other contaminants that affect the taste and smell of your water. Of course, some contaminants may not be in your water. Why not take your drinking water to the next level with a Culligan drinking water system for $9.95 per month for the first 3 months service on an annual rental agreement? Call 792-9700 for details. That's 792-9700 or visit us at arizonaculligan.com. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star's editorial page, filling in for Bill Buckmaster here on The Buckmaster Show on KVOI The Voice, 10:30 a.m. Joining me in the studio is Joe Ferguson, the Arizona Daily Star's political reporter. And we're both joined by Fred Duvall, the Democratic candidate for governor in Arizona. Joe, let's go to you for a question.
Well, let's talk just a little bit about what's ahead in terms of what's next for you guys. Do you have debates planned down here? I mean, are we going to have a chance for the general populace to meet and interact with you in the coming days ahead?
Yes, as often as possible. I know that we've accepted, I want to say, 15 or 16 debates around the state. I don't know what Doug has decided on those. And I expect there'll be, you know, more invitations coming, and we'll plan to be at as many as we can possibly be at.
Something that the governor is going to have to face when you get into office, whether it's you or Doug Ducey, is the judgment that the Arizona is going to have to pay a heck of a lot of come up with a heck of a lot of money, millions for the school system. What do you see as how do you handle that?
Yes. A critical issue, and it's timely immediately, because this will roll out in stages. And the first issue is, what happens to the current court decision? I believe we should honor the current court decision and get on with whether it's a special session or at least some negotiations to begin that dialogue. Doug has said he wants to appeal it. I think appeal is just further delay. It's clear this opinion is going to stick. This was the voter will, and our kids need the funding. And so I've called on Doug today, actually, in a statement to join me in saying, no more appeals. Let's get on with the hard decision-making going forward. Now, what does the decision-making look like? Number one, this is the kind of thing that a rainy day fund is built for. Nobody knew when this was going to come, how big the amount was going to be. So this certainly, I think, is one of the things that a rainy day can be used for. Then you've really got to look at the out years, because this is going to end up being a very, very large figure. And there are some things we can do in the short term. I think procurement reform has some potential savings. We can look at some potential privatization strategies that other states have used to create some immediate revenue possibilities. State trust land is now back, at fair market value, and in a position where I think we can move some tracts of state trust land to help us meet this. And it's consistent with the mandate of the Constitution that state trust land be used for public education. So there are ways to manage it, and I've already begun meeting with Republican and Democratic leaders of the legislature just to begin the outlines of what some of those decisions might look like over the long term to get ahead of the crisis.
Politically speaking, is it better to have a lame duck session? I mean, there's been some changes and movements in terms of some of the legislature. Is it better to have the legislature you got now than the one you might get if elected?
Oh, you know, I guess until the elections, we really don't know. I guess I lean in favor of movement. I'd like us to get going. And whether that's an informal, task force approach that gets people together, albeit in a public setting because of open meetings laws, or whether that's a formal special session, either could work. I just think we've got to begin treating this decision as real and the commitment to our children and to our schools as critical, and get on with this and quit delaying. We've delayed long enough.
Something that I've always wondered is from a political standpoint and the mechanics of a campaign is, how do you get out there and get people to know who you are when you're talking about issues that aren't soundbite issues?
Yes.
I mean, on the other side, we have, and this was true throughout the Republican primary, we were talking about how we're going to stop Obama, how we're going to, fix immigration, we're going to send troops to the border and send the bill to Obama. But that's not the kind of things that we have heard from the Fred Duvall campaign so far. And so how, from a political standpoint, how do you get your message out when what voters expect and have heard are just sort of these big soundbite lobs of messaging?
Yes. It's a great question. It is very challenging. And what happens is that the political actors, the campaigns, begin messaging to certain issues. That then raises the intensity of that issue, thereby creating a sort of an echo chamber where then the next round of advertising has to respond to that heightened awareness on that issue. And immigration is a very important issue, but it's not the only issue. And education is critically important, but our economy is the most critically important. We're just stalled. We are losing middle-class jobs for minimum wage jobs in Arizona. We are one of only a handful of states that hasn't regained its full strength from before the recession. So we've got to talk about all of these issues and do it more thoughtfully, lower the temperature a little bit rather than just sticking the other team in the eye with a sharp stick. Really see if we can create some critical mass around long-term solutions that will create the economy and opportunity and education system that we need for the future.
I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson. For those of you wondering where Bill is, he is off on vacation. I'm Sarah from the Arizona Daily Star, joined here with Joe Ferguson of the Arizona Daily Star's news team, covers politics, and in studio with us is Fred Duvall, Democratic candidate for governor. Joe.
Let's keep it on to immigration for just a moment longer. You're out there on the hoof, you're campaigning, you've been down to Tucson a lot of times. I'm hearing from Republicans who are telling me in almost any race that the border is a hot issue. Is it a hot issue with the Democrats you've been
Absolutely.
Meeting with?
Absolutely. Sure it is. You bet it is.
What are they asking for?
Yeah, I mean, I've put out, to Sarah's question about, policy, I on my website, to the extent that folks are paying attention, want to pay attention to the details, I've got an economic strategy, I've got an immigration strategy, I've got an ethics strategy, I've got a CPS strategy, all on the website. The border is very important. We've got to have border security. It's going to require both a state response and a federal response. And I, on the federal side, I join with John McCain and the bipartisan coalition for a comprehensive strategy that doubles the Border Patrol, that doubles the customs agencies, that increases the federal commitment to surveillance. We need all those federal tools to make this work, as well as a path to status for those that are here. The state also has a role to play, and the state can help go after these cartels and these bad actors, the human smugglers, the drug smugglers. We've got tools in state statutes with the banking regulations and the banking department about how it is that they move their money that pays for their activity. We've got to use that. We've got a variety of task forces with the federal government, state government, local government that can be used in this regard. I believe that we've got to enforce the employer sanction law, which has not been enforced. It's a critical part of creating more deterrence for this activity. So there are things that the state can do, and there are things the federal government must do. And most of all, Washington has just failed us. I mean, miserably. Everyone who's been part of this shares some of the blame in not getting a proper federal response, and it's time.
Something that people have also been talking a lot about, I think, is the idea that nothing, like you were saying, is nothing is getting done. That there is just sort of this general malaise, this frustration with government. Is that something that you encounter when you're out talking to people?
Absolutely. And we see it in voter turnout. People just don't know that it's going to matter anymore. And we've got to somehow shake out that alienation and apathy because I'm fond of Winston Churchill's quote that the cure to the ills of democracy is more democracy. It's more engagement. It's taking ownership of our moment. And at this moment in Arizona, we've got all the potential in the world. Arizona is an innovative state with a natural DNA for a startup 21st century economy, but we're not well organized and we don't have all the tools we need. And most importantly, we don't have the workforce we need and we're not producing the kind of quality graduates across the board where every child has a full opportunity to bring their God-given talents into education and then into our workforce.
Well, you were on the Board of Regents, which is the appointed board that oversees the public universities in the state. You're talking about people graduating from high school, from college, not being equipped and ready to take these jobs. Isn't that part of the obligation or the responsibility of the Board of Regents?
Yes, and we've had great success in improving, during my time, our retention and our productivity and our graduation rates. We're increasing our quality and quantity of graduates, but the inputs the K-12 inputs are not as big as and as good as they should be. We've got to have more high school graduates ready to perform at college for those who choose to go to college, or ready to be on a career track if they choose to go into a career. I support the college and career standards, so-called Common Core. Doug Ducey doesn't. I think you need a yardstick to compare school against school, community against community, state against state in an international economy so that you have some benchmark to say, here's what's working, here's what's not, we've got to do more of this and less of that. Common Core is a piece of that. What this really has to do with, it, more than anything else, is to stop the partisan fighting and start fixing these issues. Sarah, to your question a minute ago about people being alienated, the partisan behavior has just gotten to a point where folks wake up in the morning and they're handed their talking points, be it the red or the blue, and they just, you know, they get news by poking and they get attention and volunteers and they raise money by poking the other team in the face. It's not solving our problems, and I want to do it differently. It's why Grant's on the air. It's why Republicans are supporting me. I want to bring people together around growing our economy, creating a pro-business environment for innovation, and by better outcomes in education, where every child can go to an effective and good school.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming by the Buckmaster Show. We really appreciate the time. Half hour and a busy candidate's day is a lot of time, and we appreciate that. Thank you to Joe Ferguson from the Arizona Daily Star for being with us. Please stick with us. We will be back in the second half of the hour. We will be right back.
Stop it!
Is your dog out of control, dragging you on walks, chewing furniture, barking, or even biting? With over 40 years' experience, Dog Masters Training can train you to provide the proper leadership your dog is waiting for. From basic obedience to walking on a lead, leash aggression to socialization, Dog Masters Training. Because if you don't take control, your dog will. Visit our website, dogmasterstraining.com, or call 977-5965.
Hi, I'm Steve Christie. I've served as an RTA board member since 2009 and through last year as its chairman. The RTA continues to be a most successful regional effort, with the RTA and our member jurisdictions completing so far more than 540 construction projects to reduce congestion, increase our safety, and improve crosstown mobility. As part of the original Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm proud of our citizen-driven plan as well as the RTA's accomplishments. We deliver, we promise. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Tucson Desert Art Museum, Tucson's newest art museum, is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tankerverde Road at Sabino Canyon Road, just west of Udall Park, and on the web at TucsonDart.com. That's TucsonDart.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hi, my name is Sarah Garrett Gasson. I'm with the Arizona Daily Star's editorial board. I'm a columnist over there, and I'm filling in for Bill Buckmaster. I'd just like to say thank you to Fred Duvall, Democratic candidate for governor, and Joe Ferguson from the Arizona Daily Star. He's our political reporter, for spending time with me here at KVOI on the Buckmaster Show, filling some time talking about politics and the gubernatorial race, which is going to be very interesting as we move into the general election. We'd like to switch gears and move into something that has been in the news a lot with the very sad death of Robin Williams. And it's something that I think we talk a lot about, don't talk enough about, and don't think about enough in terms of how to reach out to people who are having a difficult time and maybe in a tough spot. And so we wanted here at the Buckmaster Show to turn to an expert and talk to Janelle Westfall. She's the clinical director of Devereaux, Arizona, and she's going to speak with us about suicide prevention. So she's a licensed professional counselor and licensed behavioral analyst. She holds a national certification as a board certified behavioral analyst, and she's worked as a therapist, clinical supervisor, and consultant for children and adolescents for over 20 years. Janelle, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
I wanted to just sort of touch base. I think it's really important that we talk about suicide prevention and mental health in general. And so thank you for making time for us. Are there things that when suicide is something that comes up in the news, as it has with Robin Williams, that you think about and that you think people listening, people watching news coverage need to know?
Yes. It is an important topic, and I'm glad we are continuing to talk about it weeks after Robin Williams' suicide. As a mental health professional, we do get very concerned when somebody that is very famous commits suicide, because there is a contagion factor that happens. We do see that. We saw that after Kurt Cobain killed himself as well, that more people, if they see a model for suicide, they see that as possible idea for themselves as well. So it is really important. And we have found throughout the last couple of decades that when we've gone into schools with crisis counselors and immediately go in and start to screen and assess and talk with teachers about what to be on the look for, then we've seen those suicide rates drop, and we see those contagion factors decrease significantly. But for many decades, we would see if there was a suicide that occurred in a high school, we would see more of them occur in that same vicinity or area. Same thing with if you have a parent or a model for suicide or a famous person that does something like that. We do see that contagion factor take place, so it is very concerning.
So what is a good way to talk about suicide and suicide prevention? We hear a lot about we need to remove the stigma about mental illness and mental health issues and bring it more into the public sphere. How do we go about doing that?
Great question. And I think the most important thing is just doing that, just talking about it. People seem to feel afraid to bring it up if they have a loved one that is maybe talking about not wanting to live anymore or thinking about suicide or giving their items away and talking about being a burden and kind of giving off a lot of these signs. People are afraid to use the word suicide or are you thinking of killing yourself, because they think, oh, I don't want to say that, I'm going to put that into their mind. But if that person already is thinking about that, they're so relieved to have somebody ask them that question. If you are going to ask the question, it's important to make sure you know what to do if they say, yes, I have been thinking about that. You do need to make sure that you have a hotline, a phone number that you can call with them, not just give them a phone number, but very important to be with the individual and call with them and tell them it's okay if they're having those thoughts and feelings, and you're going to hang out with them until you can get some help for them. But bringing up the topic and discussing it and not sounding as if you're overwhelmed by the by the topic yourself and that you are providing them with just a piece of hope, and calling with them and getting them some hope is the very best thing that you can do.
So I think there's a lot of mythology, or maybe that's not the right word, but maybe misconceptions about suicide. And some people say that, you know, if you're doing this or you've talked about it, you're just trying to get attention. You're just not really going to complete a suicide. It's something just to get attention. What do you say about that? Is that a bad thing?
Right. No, I hear that. I hear that a lot, especially when you work with adolescents. Many times people will say, oh, kids or adolescents really aren't going to kill themselves. They're just saying that to get attention. But we do know that actually people that make suicide attempts are more likely to complete a suicide. And a person who is talking about suicide is also more likely to make an attempt. So it might feel as though maybe they're doing it, quote unquote, for some kind of negative attention. But maybe that attention is a cry for help, and they're trying to get somebody to pay attention to them, to give them some help. Many times the research shows that the last 30 days before a completed suicide, when they've gone back to do what's called a suicidal autopsy, where they interview people that knew the individual that killed themselves, they find that in the 30 days prior, people will make last-ditch efforts. They'll go see their primary care physician, because usually with depression, there's a lot of headaches or insomnia or medical complaints and physical complaints that go with it. So they'll go see their primary care. They'll try to go seek a counselor. People will say, oh, yeah, they were saying this or that. So people do, at the very end of their life, even with the reports we heard about Robin Williams, if you recall, they said that about 30 days prior, he did go to rehab one last time. So people will generally try to have one last bit of hope at the very end and reach out for help. So we can't ignore that cry for help or that discussion or talk of suicide, because we do know that people that make attempts do have higher, that they can go on to complete suicide.
So talking about risk factors, we should also talk about treatments and ways to help and ways to reach out to people and give them assistance. What do we need to know both about risk factors and ways to help?
Okay. We know that previous attempts, like we were just talking about, are risk factors. We know that males complete suicide more than females. We know that substance abuse, history, and current use of substances also statistically increases the chances. It's a huge risk factor, especially alcohol, cocaine, opiates. They all increase dramatically. Chronic illnesses, having a model for suicide, like a parent, a mom, or a dad, or sibling that committed suicide, is a very big risk factor. The person talking of suicide, history of mental illness, especially a mood disorder, depression or bipolar, significantly increases the risk for suicide. So all of those things together can increase your risk. And really the most important thing to know, if you have a loved one that is contemplating this or you're concerned about, is that we have to get the point across to them that a suicidal crisis is temporary. It usually lasts for a period of hours or days, that we have to get them through that point where they can actually cross that threshold and commit suicide is usually just a short period of time. I'm not saying that they are completely fine and cured after the hours or days, but at the point where they could actually take a method and take their life is usually a short period of time that we have to get them through. So removing access to means or making access to really lethal means is really important. If you have a gun in the home and the person's talking of suicide, we know that firearms are the number one method for suicide, and it is that way in Arizona and Pima County as well, that firearms are the number one method for suicide for both adolescents and adults. So if removing access to means, removing knives, or removing things that maybe they're talking about possibly using as a plan, or making it very hard to get access to them, that is a very safe thing to do. Calling a professional with them and helping them to understand, it can really take time to find the right therapist or the right medication and not to give up just because maybe they didn't have a good match with the first one. But providing them that hope continuously is going to be the best.
So that's, I think, an important message to put out there, that it's not something that is forever, that it's,
yes,
that it's a transitory state of mind. Is that a way to think about it?
Absolutely. And it's not to say that they are not in pain and that the person is experiencing severe depression and they're having a very, very difficult time. But again, we know that there are pinnacles that occur, and there's dips and valleys. And when a person gets very, very, very low, they have that ability to not see. They're very myopic. They can't see past that. So maybe one small thing pushes them over the edge, or they start using again, or they become sober really quickly. That could also be a trigger. So it could be one thing that moves them over to that edge, but if we can help them through, which is why we do have people going to inpatient facilities for 72 hours or maybe 5 days, they're not getting cured by a 3-day or 5-day stay, but it's helping them through that suicidal crisis so that when they leave there, they can have some wraparound services, they can start to do some therapy. But really that 3 to 5 days is to help ensure their safety and keep them safe. And that's the very first thing you do with a person in a suicidal crisis. You don't start therapy right then and there. What you do is you really have to just ensure safety, supervise them, remove any access to means, and just focus on safety. After you do that and you decrease their suicidal state, then you can start to treat, and then you can start talking about therapy and medication and things like that.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Is there a local Tucson number that people should know, or a state,
yes,
number that you can, yes, offer?
Yes, there's a crisis response network, and it is in Pima County, and it's 622-6000, and they have a hotline there that you can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing this really valuable information. We've been speaking with Janelle Westfall. She's clinical director of Devereaux, Arizona, and a licensed professional counselor and behavioral analyst in Arizona. Thank you, Janelle.
Thank you so much.
We will be right back.
Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amori's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amori is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amori, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amori on the web at viroamori.com.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River, or online at vscott.com. That's vscot.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Jerry,
What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about this meeting. We have terrific internet.
Switch to Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 a month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Plus, get a 30-day money-back guarantee and free professional installation with a 3-year agreement. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Ends 8/31/14. Price excludes taxes, fees, and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Visit coxbusiness.com for internet speed options and details. Actual speeds vary. Limited 30-day money-back guarantee. Exclusions and other restrictions apply.
Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico make a great getaway for a weekend or longer. It's just 3 hours or so from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to get to an area with so much to offer, from hiking, camping, exploring downtown historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico.
Wow, I need to drink some more of my Culligan water here at the Buckmaster Show. I am Sarah Garrett Gasson with a frog in my throat from the Arizona Daily Star, filling in for Bill Buckmaster on the Buckmaster Show. Sorry about that. That was not marvelous. I do want to say that I am coming up on a good conversation, I am sure, with Reverend Allison Harrington. She is the minister over at the Southside Presbyterian Church. And I'm going to take a moment to just thank her for being with us and welcome her to the show.
Thanks so much, Sarah.
Sorry, I'm still sort of trying to recover from that little voice episode. One of the things that I wanted to ask you to come onto the show and talk about was you, as in your church, Southside Presbyterian, have your second family coming into living in your church in Sanctuary. It's a mother, Rosa Robles Loreto, and her husband and two sons. And what is the latest?
Well, the latest is that we're still waiting for a favorable judgment from the government on her case. Rosa, like too many families in our community, is threatened with deportation, threatened with being torn apart from her children. Even though, the government has said that women like Rosa are not a priority for deportation because she has no criminal record, because she has wonderful ties to the community, is tax-paying, volunteers at her church, is a little league mom. The Obama administration has said that we don't want to waste our money deporting people like Rosa. And so we're appealing to them saying, please don't allow this family to stay together. And so until they do allow her to stay with her family, we are housing them at our church.
So your church has been through this before with a family, and ultimately about a month or so, as I recall, he was able to get some sort of legal status. What are the chances of Rosa and her family being able to achieve the same, do you think?
We're very hopeful because Rosa's situation is very similar to Daniel's situation, and we are very hopeful that eventually she will be offered a stay of her deportation order. What we're asking ICE to do is something that they do every single day. They dismiss cases on people like Rosa because they are not considered high priority for deportation. So we're not asking them to do anything extraordinary or miraculous. We're just asking them to kind of follow their own policies and procedures around this issue.
So Southside Presbyterian has a long history going back to the 80s and the founding of the sanctuary movement. I know Bill Buckmaster had on John Fife, Reverend John Fife, a couple weeks ago when I was on the show, and he spoke very passionately about how this movement started, of churches opening their doors to refugees from Central America. And do you see this as an extension of the mission of your particular church? Is this something that is gaining traction across religious communities?
Yeah, I mean, we really see this as an extension of our faith and an extension of what we see as Christian hospitality. You know, our scriptures call us to love our neighbor as ourselves, and we think that standing alongside families like Rosa is a way in which we can love our neighbor. And it is gaining traction across the nation. We're getting lots of calls and having lots of conversations with other congregations who are often feeling very compelled in this same way, because they know that Congress has really failed in numerous ways to pass a reasonable immigration reform. And so, you know, we don't want our grandkids to look back on the church of our generation and see a moral failing in us. And so there's many people who are beginning to discern what God might be calling them to do in this particular historical moment.
A logistical question I think people might have is, did Daniel, the man who with his family was in sanctuary previously, and Rosa here, do they come to you? Are you saying, we're trying to start a movement, we're looking for people who are, you know, good family people, upstanding folks who are good case studies, or how does this work?
That's a great question. We are coming into contact with folks like Rosa and Daniel through the legal clinic that runs out of our church on the first and third Saturdays of the month. They are working with Dreamers and filing their DACA applications, and they're working with other people who have final orders of deportation, who the government will close those orders if they're just asked in the right way. And unfortunately, with Daniel and with Rosa, they were working with lawyers who weren't asking for their deportation cases to be closed under what the Obama administration introduced as what's called prosecutorial discretion. So we're not out there seeking people saying, hey, if you need sanctuary, come over here. But these are people who have come to us in a moment of crisis through our through that legal clinic.
Is this something that you personally believe in as a woman of faith, as a leader of a church, that you brought to your church? Or is this something that the congregation is embracing with the history of the church? How do you as an organization come to this decision?
Well, this was something that I brought to them, and I felt very convicted myself that this is how the church, I feel very strongly that our church is being called to this. Other churches might be feeling called in different ways, and we understand that, and we don't think every church needs to be a sanctuary church, but we think that every community of faith needs to prayerfully discern that in this moment of real crisis that's been going on for many, many years, what is our call in relationship to that? And so the congregation is wholeheartedly behind this. We're not all in agreement 100% because, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at this issue, and it is very complicated. And so we have great conversations as a community of faith, but regardless of political differences, we feel very united in our faith in Christ, who calls us to care for the widow and the stranger, and who calls us to stand alongside orphans. And we really want to make sure that our immigration system is not orphaning sweet Jose Emiliano and Gerardo Jr., who are the sweetest boys, little league players who are just about as all-American as you can get. And we really want to make sure that their mom, Rosa, is always in the stands cheering them on at their little league game.
Excellent. So one thing that I've also wondered is this something that are they working through donations? Are they, how financially are they able to support themselves?
It is difficult because they were a two-person income home. You know, Rosa is a certified public accountant back in Mexico. Here she cleans homes and does other sort of things of that nature. And so it has been difficult, but we have gotten donations. And the community support for this family has been overwhelming. So we're very grateful to the Tucson community for that.
Great. Well, thank you, Reverend Allison Harrington, Sarah, of Southside Presbyterian, for joining us here on the Buckmaster Show. I'd also like to thank Culligan Water. It's better water, pure and simple. Thank you. I am Sarah Garrett Gasson, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. He will be back soon. Thanks, and have a wonderful day.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.